Okay, I'm Donna Durker. I'm one of the volunteers for Moderation Management, and I'm here with Katie Byrne. She's a licensed psychotherapist, harm reduction specialist, and addiction therapist, writer, editor, and author of a book called The Courage to Speak Up, which I have read and loved. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But before we do that, I want to get to a few questions, because Katie is the person who interviews other people, like already interviewed Just Plain Phil, also known as Larry Waller. She's the executive director for Moderation Management. I interviewed Carrie May, who's the program director. And I thought it would be nice if we would interview the interviewer. And so that's why we're here to learn more about Katie. And so the first question I want to ask you, Katie, is how you found out about Moderation Management, or what brought you here.
Yeah, I was searching the web and wondering if I knew my drinking for me was really making me feel fuzzy in the morning. And, I live in the wine country, and so a bottle of wine a day was kind of what was emerging. And I knew that I didn't want to drive after a couple drinks. And I knew that even socially I was feeling kind of like, you know, that feeling we all know where even after one drink, but especially after two, I didn't feel very present with people, and I started to feel almost a little paranoid, like I just wasn't connecting well, and I didn't like the feeling. So I found a therapist on the web who did what we call, I guess, harm management. And I interviewed her over the phone, and I couldn't believe it that somebody actually counseled people to reduce their drinking and manage it and control it in a way rather than stop drinking. And I was shocked that there was such a thing because I had a background in Al-Anon for 12 years, 12 steps, with Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. I've had a lot of addictions. And so I didn't feel that I wanted to stop drinking. So she helped me a lot. Many of you have heard my story. And I learned little things, big things too, but also things like, that we all know we talk about, like delaying my drinking. Instead of a 5 o'clock drink, I would have one later because I would do my laundry or go to yoga. So then she turned me on to some books. I know it's a bit of a long answer, but I want to give this to you all. And the books were like Over the Indulgence and Responsible Drinking, and one called Her Best Kept Secret. And there were a lot of others. But I learned in that process that it was also rather important for me as a woman to feel that I could make choices and have some power in my own life rather than feeling powerless. So anyway, that's the short summary. I hope that gives you the beginning of how I... And then I found Moderation Management on the web, and I struggled through the computer aspect of it and then found this phone conference, and it has really, really changed me radically because I've had about almost a year now of just support so that I don't judge myself, and I've been able to try different things that work for me and don't work for me in the process. That's the answer to your question.
Well, that's a pretty complete answer. So what do you think for you? This is for you in particular, but also if you know what works for others too, just based on work with your clients and friends and stuff like that. What works for you? I know the support without judgment, you kind of covered that in the previous answer. But, have there, and I think you also mentioned, planning. But was there anything else that you had found particularly helpful?
Yeah, one of the things that has helped me a lot in moderation management for regulating our drinking is trial and error, trying things and finding that they work or they don't work. I've taken days off. I know some people do. The program recommends 30 days. I haven't done that, but I have taken days off. I have delayed my drinking. I have not kept alcohol in the house. And then I have also kept alcohol in the house. And trying things and failing, or trying things and having them work, has been very empowering, also sometimes discouraging. And the other thing is just, and planning really is a big thing, I think, for us, for me. But also something we don't maybe always talk about a lot, but I found that when I'm not drinking, to be aware that it might be hard. And it's important, I think, for me to know that, because my moods will come up and the voices will come up and say, oh, well, that would be so relaxing. We do talk about this, you know, at our meetings, that it might be nice, oh, help me sleep or lessen my anxiety or, you know. So while I'm taking my shower and getting on my pajamas, sometimes I'll laugh at myself thinking, you know, that's not true. I mean, those are the old beliefs, but really the sugar and the alcohol just wake me up with more anxiety in the middle of the night. So I think that's another thing, is just knowing that it can be hard in the beginning. And that those are some of the thoughts I've had before our interview tonight. And there's a little bit of extra, I think, sometimes loneliness I have to be prepared for. It's not that I'm not lonely when I drink, because we all know it is, but it's kind of, I always can talk about it like a baby bottle. You know, I think it kind of is something to hold on to. So I just prepare myself for some of those feelings, and they pass as I do self-care, a shower, you know, meditation, doing a lot of meditation, having some really good reading, things to soothe me. And then I feel so much better the next day. So does that answer your question?
Definitely. And it actually answers the next question, too.
Oh, good.
The hard part, yeah.
I've got lots of material, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, when you said that about, you know, it does sort of feel like a binky, you know, like the adult binky or pacifier, you know, sometimes.
Right.
And I think one of the callers earlier before we started recording was talking about smoking, and you do have, that can be, you know, a pacifier too of sorts. It just kind of helps us cope in those trying times, whether the cause is loneliness or, you know, fighting with your family or your ex-spouse or whatever. There's lots of reasons that we sometimes need help coping, but there are other tools out there.
Well put. I mean, money concerns, marriages in under stress, children, work. I mean, getting older, it goes on and on. So, it's worry. And, I'm glad you were all talking about the things that, I mean, it's an addictive culture. So, I mean, I started this with an eating issue. And then, I mean, you know, it's all kind of a big, big hairball, a big emotional lot to deal with emotionally.
And this is, you know, you had mentioned this earlier when you were answering the question about, you know, when you first found moderation management. You know, it's different. You know, it's not what most people had heard of or were used to in terms of dealing with problem drinking. And so, you know, so what would you say for somebody that, you know, isn't quite sure, is this right for them, or, you know, maybe something else would work better for them? What would you?
Well, you know, I did a lot of thinking about that, because I knew we were going to do this interview. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe, is about 81 years old this year, either 81 or 82. That's one lifetime. And so moderation management is also, it's pioneering. And I think it's interesting. We're living through history. And AA was very divinely inspired. It's brilliant. It does work. And so do the 12-step programs, you know, We use phrases even in this program, take what you want, leave the rest, one day at a time, and so on sometimes. But I think you have to just see if it works for you. I mean, if you keep getting DUIs or you keep, you know, getting drunk, and, you know, and Donna, you know, people in this program do decide just not to drink anymore, and some stay in moderation management, and some drink every other month. So I don't have a thermometer for people, but what's wonderful is you get to decide and you get to try and see what works for you, you know, and all the history, and you know better than I do the research on genetics and all that. I can't speak to that. I'm not a big believer in it, but I do believe that people have to make their own choices. And I hope that answers that your question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I would like to go to your book a little bit, because I think your book really touches on some of the issues that I think really cause a lot of us to drink, quite honestly. I mean, we're no matter how good or bad our life is, we're faced repeatedly with situations where we have to work through conflicts with others.
Right.
And it could be like with an ex-spouse on a parenting plan, or with coworkers who differ, you know, who want to do things differently than what we would like to see it done. You know, all sorts of things. Just it's normal. It's just
right.
Just we're not going to be able to avoid it. And I'll give you an example. One of the things that I absolutely, the quotes from your book, you were talking about conflict and friendship. And you say, we must learn to speak to each other about our needs without making each other wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that quote. And it just sort of seems like, you know, to some extent what our country is kind of, you know, what
right.
really kind of the world is going through right now with, you know, people can disagree. Reasonable people can disagree about things. And how do we try to work toward a solution that maybe isn't the, you know, optimal solution from either perspective? Or, you know, sometimes there's more than two perspectives. But, you know, how can we communicate at least about what we want without attacking the other person? And I was wondering if you could say a little bit about that.
Yeah, I would like to offer that to whoever can hear this, because it's deeply important. I know we've just got like about 5 minutes left, so I've got, of course, a lot to say. My book is called The Courage to Speak Up, and so it's important, and I think it relates to moderation management and to all addictions, because we do stuff, what we're feeling, we don't know how to say what we need to say to people. So what I learned is when you have a difficult communication, the main thing is to make sure you know your intention, and it should be a positive intention. Like, I wish we could get along, or I wish we could find peace together, or I need to feel close to you again. It needs to be a positive intention like that. And then if it's a really difficult conversation, I had them back when I was in a work situation that was constant conflict and politics, and I had to repeat, maybe in one half-hour conversation, I had to repeat the intention 3 or 4 times. I really want to work together with you. I want to collaborate with you. I want us to get along and succeed together. So that's one thing. The other thing is to make I statements.
Here we had a glitch where we lost Katie for about a minute. And she was just explaining that when you communicate, besides your positive intention, it's useful and important to use I statements, like not like I hate you or I wish you weren't my sister, but something to communicate a more vulnerable feeling, like I feel scared when we fight, or I'm a little embarrassed to tell you, but I just don't have the money. Say the first truth then take a deep breath and see how it's received, then the next truth. Last but far from least, state your wish or need, and sometimes this is all you have time for. Saying what you need allows you to speak on your own behalf without attacking. This could be, for instance, I wish we could agree on how to spend weekends, or I need more support, or I am needing more time to work on this radio video. The I statement is always a wish or a need and not a demand or a criticism. We all have wishes when they are spoken. We feel able to nourish ourselves and feel more alive. The final thing to say about this is how frightening it is to speak up. That may have to be another interview, but try to remember that it's scary and an act of courage. None of us wants to lose love in our lives or feel abandoned or shunned. Those are the risks when we speak up. It can require support, so believe in yourself.
One of the things I say in the book is boundaries are a substitute for soul. And what I mean by that is I learned in various therapies to set boundaries and detach and remove myself from people. But I learned that when my mom died, I could never recover the loss because I hadn't said to her what I felt, which was, I'm afraid of your anger and I want us to talk about it and I want to feel less tense around you. I want to be able to come home and visit and relax, and I'm afraid to even bring this up. Those would be really vulnerable I statements and me saying what I wanted. And because I didn't do that, I lost our last final days. I don't know. So communication is important for us to learn, and it's deeply important for the world. And I'm really worried because our communities have to say this last thing. Freedom of speech is something we still have, and we have to use it before we lose it. And we really have to work together. Like I always say, like ants. You know how ants, they're better than people. They know how to carry a breadcrumb all the way up a hill, and they get along. And we have got to learn to do that if we're going to have our power as a community, any community in this world, and have rights and the power that we have now to have freedom of speech and programs like this, like Moderation Management, where we can connect and help each other and feel safe. And that's it. I'm Katie Byrne. I'm still here, and you can find me on the web, Katie, KATYB, as in boy, YRNE.com, or katiebyrne@aol.com. Just want to say that. And I want to say Donna Durker is a very impressive person in moderation management. I first discovered Donna in one of the books when I read her name. Quite often, Donna, you were mentioned as one of the leading people in moderation management, and I want to thank you so much for that. So that's my spiel.
I was wondering, Katie, if you would mind if I read one paragraph that touches on that boundaries from your Courage to Speak Up book. It's not terribly long, but
I'd be so honored. In fact, because we're doing this tonight, I've done some more writing myself, and I'll send you some of it, or I'll send it to you, and also a couple pieces I haven't attached yet. But
hopefully, that'll end up on the members'
blog.
Thank
you so much. Donna, you have been so supportive in my life. And,
This is just a very powerful paragraph. Okay, since that time, therapists have become enamored with boundaries and setting limits. I believe that boundaries are a substitute for soul. Setting limits has been misunderstood. When you say what you feel, fear, and desire, you don't need to push people away or avoid them. You won't kill anyone or dislike yourself. When you risk being authentic, people know what's happening. There is no sniper attack. Everything's on the table, especially when you learn to identify your deepest, most vulnerable needs and intention. So I just think that that's the coolest paragraph.
Thank you. Thank you. You made me reread my book.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. And this has been... interview with Katie Byrne, licensed therapist and harm reduction advocate, and hopefully we'll get this up to podcast very soon. I'm sure that many will enjoy it.
I look forward to it. Thank you all.
See you again next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.